it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
On Breakfast with Vossie and Brandy, Throwback Thursday.
Well, this man has lived a life in rugby league. We're not just talking as a player. We are talking as a referee, and that makes him a pretty rare commodity. The first grade career, by tally of matches, you'll think, well, it's not that much, but there's grand finals in there, and there's a grand final premiership, and that's the last game he plays. So in the career of Luke Phillips, 105 matches, Raiders, Cowboys, Manly, and Roosters. And then there's the refereeing career. Then there's his side hustle. You're going to be interested to hear what he does on the side. And then, of course, there's that incident where he got stapled in the head. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Throwback Thursday, the one and only Luke Phillips. How you doing, Luke?
Hey, Vossie. How are you, boys?
Very Lukey. Well. I almost feel like I've got to go straight to the crunch. Like, what is it like to be stapled in the head, Luke? Can you take us back to that occasion? I know we're going to jump around the place on your career and your life. But you were stapled in the head on primetime television, and not many people had seen this before.
No, well, the doc came to the training a couple of weeks before and was sort of going through how he's actually got this new device, and if someone's got a cut, they don't have to come off and get stitched. You can do it on the sideline so they don't lose a replacement. So, you know, yeah, within 2 weeks, obviously, it was a cold night in Parramatta, and I was the lucky first contestant where I was split above the eye. And as I was coming off, I saw him come racing over, and he just pulled out this what looked to me just like a stapler. Like, it was just like a stapler. And the next minute, it was just crunch into me side of my head. And like I said, unfortunately, my family were sitting right in front of it in the front row at Parramatta Stadium, and they said they could actually hear the crunching noise from the grandstand. So it was not the best.
best. Did the doc say, look, this isn't going to hurt? Unintentional. Yeah, what did he say?
He actually did it on his own head at training, believe it or not, and when he was explaining to the players, and he just went click, and all the players were in shock. And then Brian Fletcher said, well, how are you going to get that out now? And he said, oh, it's easy. And he got out a little pair of scissors and did it himself, and split, and then all of a sudden this dribble of blood was running down his head. It was just like, boy, was thinking, oh, my God, how tough is our doc, you know?
So he did do things a little differently, didn't training. He? Dr. John Orchard, yeah, he was a little bit left field.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Unintentional fairy tale we spoke about. So your last game ended up being a grand final win, Luke. What before we talk about the grand final win, what transpired after the grand final that saw you retire the following year?
Yeah, so I broke my shoulder leading into the final series that year, and I actually sort of didn't realise it was fully broken. I just thought it was sore. We didn't actually get it x-rayed, and I was just getting a physio on it. It wasn't responding, and then they decided to needle it for training, and then it sort of like the pain went away. So they said, well, look, let's just needle it for the grand final. So I did that, and then obviously it got worse in the grand final. It actually, the muscle pulled away a piece of bone, so I couldn't actually lift my arm during the game. So I got through the grand final. Then obviously I had to have a big operation after that, and it was quite an extensive recovery. And then when I came back in reserve grade, I got a couple other little big injuries, and I'd sort of started my business. So I just thought, well, you know, I'd achieved a grand final, which not many players do, and I had to concentrate my business, so I just decided to retire. So it ended up being my last game in first grade.
Amazing. And there had been grand final defeat. Now, as I said, we're jumping around the place, but 2000, I say to this day, Roosters Brisbane was a bludger of a grand final for mine. It was quite boring in front of a crowd of over 100,000. But you were the best player on the field, Luke. You should have won Clive Churchill medal on that day. And I think Wingy was very good, but I thought you were the best player. What do you remember about 2000 grand final day and that massive crowd?
Yeah, well, the crowd was the biggest thing. It was amazing running out because it was before they took the ends down from the after the Olympics, so they could fit more people in. But yeah, massive, massive crowd. Basically, just remember, I was just running around everywhere tackling, like I was just Brisbane were obviously a red hot side that year, and just yeah, running from one side of the field to the other, trying to make tackles, and yeah, keep us in the game. So it was just one of those games. It was going to be very hard for us to win. But we obviously did our best, and it was a great experience. Yeah.
So you played for the Roosters, the Seagulls, the Cowboys, but it all started with the Raiders, and that's where you grew up playing league in Canberra.
Yeah, I didn't play a lot of league. I didn't play any junior reps as a kid. I grew up playing AFL and basketball. I was born in Melbourne and I followed Fitzroy as a kid, and it wasn't until I sort of moved to Canberra that all my mates at school played league. So I sort of started about 13 and played for a couple of years, and I didn't play any. I sort of stopped at 15 and then was lucky enough to start back up when I was 19 for a pub side called the Valley Statesman. And the coach there, Billy Thompson, he was good mates with Craig Bellamy. And he actually, who was the Raiders reserve grade coach at the time. So he asked him if he could give me a trial, and I trialled there. And me and Ben Kennedy sort of made that side in 96. So that's where it all started, yeah.
So from a financial point of view, now we are getting into the Super League War, which is part of your rugby league life. It's a pretty handy time to come into grade because Super League 1997. Now, Throwback Thursday, we pull back the curtains. Are you prepared to say what you got paid? Like, some players got massive amounts of money. But for you to go to Super League and play with the Cowboys, can you tell us? Would you be comfortable telling us what you got paid?
Yeah, I was supposed to be at Canberra, and then I got injured during that year, in my first year at the Raiders, and I didn't make their top squad, and I went back to spray painting because I thought, well, that's it, my career's done. And then Tim Sheens actually ran my shop and just said, look, I noticed you're not in the Raiders 25. He said, I've just moved up here to the Cowboys. Would you sit in coming up? So I thought, I would. It would be good. And I was only on match payments, but it was $4,500 a game. And obviously I played the whole game, the whole year, so I mean, around $100,000. But I knew there was guys there that had signed for like $200,000, like Dion Cope, for example, and he didn't play a game and then ended up playing. It was a 3-year contract and then obviously played 2 years in the bush back in his hometown earning $200,000 a year. So there was guys that did really well out of
the boat. You missed the boat, Lou. You missed the boat. You didn't get the sign on. Nothing.
Nah. It was funny. I remember because it was at Canberra when it all started, and there was players sort of going in first, and they just say to them, oh, how much do you want? And they went, oh, I'll have 100 grand. They said, righto. And then they'd come out and say, oh, I've got 100. So the next bloke would go in after 150. And then Ricky Stewart was too smart. He went and laughed, ended up with about 600 or 700, you know. And so it was just, it was quite comical the way it all went down.
Yeah. So match payments went from about $300 a game to $4,500 a game. So even that year on match payments, it was still a pretty good wicket to what everyone would have been compared to prior to the Super League War. It was an amazing time. Yeah. Now you talk about your business. Before we get into the refereeing, so ticket time, sort of like I tried to explain it to Vossi. I said sort of like time zone. That's your business now. It's called Ticket Time, but
tell us
about it.
It's similar to a time zone, same concept, just ticket based machines. Kids come in and play the games, get tickets and get prizes sort of thing. So it's just, but it's a little bit better. Obviously time zone, you got to spend a heap of money to sort of win something small, whereas we're sort of, ours is family-based business, so it's a little bit more generous in that sort of side. But I've only got two. There's one up at Southport in Australia Fair, and the other one's just out at Preston's inside the House of Wow, the kids centre out there. So it's going okay, ticking along, and obviously just doing my coaching. I've started coaching as well. I've sort of done, obviously, playing and refereeing, so I thought I'd just go to the trifecta and start coaching. So I've been coaching the North Sydney Bears, Tasha Gale side, and helping John Strange with the NRLW Roosters as well the last couple of years. Right. So I'm enjoying that as well.
There we go. So, you're covering every base there is in rugby league. You'll be a CEO probably somewhere down the track, Luke. You just mentioned Preston's with the ticket time. Is that near the badminton club? Just out of interest, by the badminton club there at Preston's or not? It's open till midnight.
I'm not sure. I would know where the badminton club is.
Not many people do.
Good smother. Yeah.
Four knocks you get in, Luke. Four knocks, and the last knock's got to be like that. Luke, refereeing. A lot of people who, I don't know, because your career finished, you end up being a referee. Had it always been a goal, or was it something you were absolutely talked into, even drag kicking and screaming? I'm interested to know that, because most players would say, would you be a referee? No, no. So where did that thought enter your head?
Yeah, look, and I was probably one of them that said no, but it was, you know, it was Phil Gould. Used to always talk about it back at the club when I was injured, obviously, that year, just saying, look, mate, why don't you get into refereeing? You're still young enough and involved in the game. And, sort of after a few times, it sort of just thought, well, I might as well give it a go, you know, like, because it was something that my actual dad did it. He was played AFL in Melbourne and went into refereeing because he had a bad knee injury. So he sort of helped me sort of make the decision as well. So that's sort of how it all started. And I was living up the Central Coast and Shane Hain was up there running the refs up there. So I went and had a meeting with him. And, just the first game I tried it, I actually thought, wow, this is really good. Like, it was totally not what I expected. Obviously playing the game made it so much easier to make decisions on things. And, I just found I really enjoyed it. So just decided to make a go of it.
Because there was a push, wasn't there, 15 years ago for ex-players to become referees. There seemed to be, there was. The game wanted it to happen.
Yeah, definitely. And it was, I think it's because they have an understanding of the players, when players are trying to cheat or milk and things like that. So it helps. The thing I found hard was, obviously when we get to NRL, they try and make all the referees the same. So you have the same interpretation, the same ruling on everything. So I just found that a little bit hard because I didn't like giving away penalties. Some bloke puts his finger on the ball, you had to penalise it, you know. So I just didn't like that. I used to joke with Henry Perinara, who I was in there with, saying when I was doing New South Wales Cup that I wanted to try and get a nil all penalty count. That was my goal. But obviously there were head-eye tackles and just ones you had to blow. And I think 2-1 was the lowest I got. And you'd get in trouble sometimes because they thought you're putting pressure on the referee next week who had that team because you let them get away with a couple of things. And so I just found it that when it got to the very top, it was a lot different than what it was coming through the grade. So I just found it pretty hard.
Luke, did you referee, and you lose track of time and eras, and were you part of the two-man refereeing system?
Yeah.
Or were you on your own as well at some stage?
No, I was part of the two referees. So I actually didn't get to referee as a head referee. I was always the pocket referee. So I was always behind the ruck. And you get a couple of sets. They let you referee about 10% of the game or something. So you get a couple of sets you get on the 10 metres. But I refereed the 30-odd games, whatever it was. It was just all from that pocket position.
Okay. And we went back to the one referee. Was it COVID? Was it 2020? I think we went back to the one referee. What do you think about that? Do you think there should be two referees? Is there too much on one referee's plate at the moment?
I think now with the bunker, obviously the captain's challenge, that sort of fixed that up because it was all around the ruck. That's the reason the second ref was there, to try and have another set of eyes behind the ruck for strips and all that sort of stuff. So now with the bunker, I suppose it's not needed because they can just challenge if they feel like they've been stripped or something's happened in the ruck there. So, I think it's fine to have just the one interpretation.
Luke Phillips, our guest on Throwback Thursday, here on the text. My favourite Luke Phillips moment was the 2000 prelim. The Knights made a break and he somehow managed to tackle two players and save the game. Got Roosters into the grand final. First grand final in 20 years. So there's a little Roosters memory. This one, Diamond was absolutely robbed for the Churchill medal in 2000, especially considering some of the other players from the losing teams to win. There you go. So lots of support for you. Luke, just on, also people asking, so what did a referee get paid when you came in? Was it lucrative? Did you think, well, I can just do this as a job and cannot have to have the side hustle? Did you make enough money being a ref or not?
Yeah. So the referee back then, when I was refereeing, I think the minimum was 100,000. The top referees, I think, got 180, like the Shane Haynes and the Archers at the time. So it was definitely a full time job. The touch judges would only be part time, and they'd have to have a second job. But they got paid. I think they got paid like about $3,500 a game as well. So in the end, they'd end up making more than the actual refs because they had jobs plus their part time ref touch judging. So I think it's all changed now that they're all multi-skilled. So, you know, all the people that actually referee, they run the lines as well. So they're all full-time in there. So, it's definitely a full-time job.
And I've got Luke's number, so whenever there's a decision, if I'm on the panel at Fox, boom, straight to Luke. So, Luke, what do you think of that? Do you still watch games? And do you still watch games and go, oh, that's a power, that's a shocker?
Yeah, it's funny how, like, for me watching it, the interpretation sort of goes in circles, and sometimes they change something and then nothing happens for a long time, and they forget about it, and then it goes back to the old one, and then all of a sudden that becomes the normal and it gets changed again. So grounding's a really good example of that. With separation, and they change it, all the time. And then it just sort of, you don't get one for a long time, and then it goes back to the original one somehow, and then it gets brought up again. So it's just, it's funny how it sort of all goes in circles. And obstruction as well as another one that's always debatable and seems to change here and there. So sometimes they used to rule that, if you're milking the obstruction, that would stop the blokes falling down, and then it just, just keeps changing that, you just got to touch a guy and fall over and you get a penalty. So it's it sort of evolves as the game goes on year after year. It's quite funny how it sort of goes in circles.
Well, this interview has been a great snapshot of your life, from junior player who got into rugby league late, to playing first grade, to going back to being a spray painter, to then heading off to Townsville, to going to Manly, onto the Roosters, play two grand finals, win a premiership, inadvertently play your last game ever in a premiership-winning grand final, becoming a referee and running the ticket time business, and now a coach. Luke, that is some story, and still many years to come, I would hope.
Yeah, well, like I said, the coaching, I'm coaching at the Pennant Hills Cherrybrook Stags at the moment, three grades, all the women's girls, the 14s, 16s and the A grade. It's a new space, and it's just really good. Like, the girls are starting at, they haven't played since they were six or seven, so it's actually, it's good to be able to give back to the game the stuff you've learnt, through not only a player, but obviously as a referee, and also, when I do a bit of consulting with NRL clubs, just picking up, defensive systems and stuff like that to help the kids learn as quick as they can, because it's such a short time they've been in the game. But I'm just really enjoying that at the moment.
Hey, Luke, thanks for being our guest on Throwback Thursday here on Breakfast with Vossie and Brandy.
No worries, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, Luke.
Of course, the man who was stapled in the head, the very first. There can only ever be one first. Luke Phillips was the first, and of course, Michael DeVere followed. This is Breakfast with Vossie and Brandy.